Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday afternoon. The Tims are back. Joining me from New York City, New York, is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, guys. How are we doing?
And we're zooming across the coast to the West Coast. Joining us from Los Angeles, California, where he's working on NBA Today this week. Freshly back from Europe. Freshly off his wedding. Congratulations. Welcome back, Ben McMahon.
Bonjour, partners.
There you go. Look at that.
I can't do it. Howdy, partners. No, there's bonjour, and then there's...
Les howdy.
Yeah, oui, oui.
You know, another French word, too, that you probably won't figure out. My last name is a French word, boss.
It is? There's an Avenue des McMahon right down in the heart of Paris, by the way. French, but I'm a damn hero.
I saw that on the gram.
I was in Ireland recently. There's a bunch of McMahons over there. A
lot of them. That's the homeland generations ago.
Yeah. Welcome back. I hope you had a great honeymoon. Hope you had a great wedding. Good to see you.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed your damn tea and crumpets and that they were worth it while you were ditching us.
I did. Thank you very much. I did. Didn't even think of you. You were thinking of Bontemps as you were walking down the street, but... we got news here this week. LeBron James signed his contract extension, 2 years, $97 million. Although we don't 100% know yet because it'll be based on the max contract. Could be altered a little bit. Second year is a player option. I'm not surprised that he signed the contract. I'm mildly surprised that he signed the contract in August with the Lakers really not having made a major transaction. And, just because he has plausible deniability. I'm on vacation. I'm with my son's AAU team. My kids are in Europe because I think his boys have been playing in Europe. I'm not sure what leverage he would have been able to wield as he just sat there with the extension sitting on the table. But it would have been something. And he basically, basically said, I trust the Lakers to do right by me for the next 2 years. So maybe it'll work out. Maybe it won't. Bontemps, you tweeted about it immediately. You were surprised about something else with this contract.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised he signed the extension because it took off the table what to me was the best option for the Lakers to improve going forward, which is to have the ability to have LeBron take less money next summer, like James Harden did in Philly, to give them the option to have a full max contract slot to go chase a free agent, what's going to be a pretty good free agent class, at least potentially, and just have more money to build out the roster that way. Obviously, to your point, the Lakers haven't done a lot this offseason. They don't have a lot of things to do. They can only really trade Russ in these two picks. And as we've talked about on the pod, we're probably going to talk about later on the pod today, this is not a championship level team. And to your point about LeBron not really putting pressure on the Lakers by signing this now, I just have found it fascinating that, and you know this better than anybody, Brian, for the first 15 years of LeBron's career, he put constant pressure on the franchise he was with. Whether it's the first time he was with the Cavs, the second time, or he's in Miami, there was a constant sort of Damocles hanging over the franchise. You have got to trade your young players, got to trade your draft picks, got to get better right now because we got to win right now. And since he got to the Lakers, that has not been the case. He has signed the longest contracts he could sign. He has signed early. He's not had player options until now. He's really gone out of his way to show he is going to be in LA for a long time. And I just think that dichotomy between what he was doing before and what he's done since he's been in LA is pretty fascinating. I think it signals to me, at least, that at least for LeBron being in LA and with the player option, having the flexibility to play with his kid in a couple of years, if he's in the league, that seems like it takes greater precedent than putting himself in the single best possible position to win right now, because it's pretty hard to argue by signing this extension, he's done that.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing and what we've seen over these last few years is kind of LeBron shifting from championships being the end-all, be-all, top priority to he's not just a businessman. I mean, he's a business mogul. And so, being based in LA, playing for the Lakers, kind of all the things that come along with location, glamour, et cetera, et cetera. I think those mean as much to him as maximizing his chances to win a championship. And, in LeBron's mind, he probably thinks, hey, if I'm healthy, if AD's healthy, we're going to have a chance. But this isn't the guy who is, just fighting and scratching and clawing and squeezing to have every possible, best chance to compete for a championship. And it does, he can kind of grumble behind the scenes and, push behind the scenes for them to make moves. But signing this extension, it's not like he has a threat or leverage over the franchise at this point.
So back when LeBron initially signed with the Heat, obviously, if you remember, he took slightly less than the max contract to help afford Mike Miller and Udonis Haslam. Even though, especially when you figured in the taxes, they didn't have to pay in Florida for the home games, at least NBA players are taxed each individual game. They have to pay taxes even if they play one game a year in a place, if there's a state income tax. It always kind of bothered him and irked him, even though he agreed to it. It wasn't like it was forced on him. And I remember one day in Indiana, whenever the Heat played the Pacers, it was always a big game. And there was a shoot around shoot around on game day. And I don't remember how, but it came up about salaries. Somebody must've gotten a big salary somewhere. And I brought up to him that he had never actually been the highest paid player on his team. He was tied as the highest paid player with Chris Bosh, but he wasn't the highest paid player. And he his head snapped around and he goes, "That's an untold story." And he kind of went off on a rant about being underpaid, which he was underpaid. And part of the reason why he only signed 1 year contracts when he went back to Cleveland was because they knew that the cap spike was coming and he didn't want to get locked into a contract before the cap spike. He kind of wanted to re-up every year. It had the ancillary benefit of also keeping his foot on the Cavs' throats. And also after they won the 2016 title, he rewarded them with a 2-year contract. after the cap spike, it wasn't like he was like, "Okay, now that the cap spike has happened, I will sign for 4 years." He signed for 2. So both are true. But I just remember when he was coming out of his Miami contract, being told with no uncertain terms, LeBron is a max player. He will always be a max player. And so while you're right, Bontemps, and the difference between LeBron functionally at this point in his career making $48 million and maybe $42 million, that's $6 or $8 million if he took less, could potentially open up some doors. It's probably not that much on his bottom line. But ever since he didn't get those maxes in Miami, it's always been like, "I am a max player. I am." He's underpaid at $50 million, probably.
Yeah.
And
unquestionably,
that's always been a thing. But I think it kind of goes to, LeBron at the end of the day wants to be an LA Laker. He wants to be paid the most possible money he can. And he wants to leave the door open to play with his son, which this contract has an option year when Bronny is eligible to join the NBA. I don't know whether Bronny is going to be prepared to join the NBA in 2 years. I don't know if LeBron would actually opt out of a contract with the Lakers and let's say another team drafted him, if he would follow through on that and go play for another team, even if it meant playing for the minimum. Maybe the team that would draft Bronny wouldn't have salary cap space. Because the thing that people talk about LeBron wanting to play with his son, LeBron's actual quote on that is, "My last year in the NBA will be with my son." Doesn't necessarily mean that it'll be his son's first.
Is rookie year, right?
And it doesn't necessarily mean
Bronny might be a 10-year vet that year.
I don't know. So I think there's a lot of unknowns there, but what you're sort of moving around, Bontemps, is that maybe LeBron isn't making number one priority. I want to be on the team that has the best chance to win a championship right this very second. And he might dispute that. He might say, any team with me is a championship contender. And he might even say to you, I'm betting on the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm betting on the Lakers to be able to attract talent, because he kind of did in 2018. That team he came to in 2018 did not have championship talent.
No, I mean, it was clearly not a championship team at the time. Clearly.
He was wagering that they would, you know, be able to draw championship talent. They got Anthony Davis the next year and it worked out. So, but you know, both things can be true. He can prioritize. He can still want to win, but not necessarily making that the be all end all, which I felt like you said, Bontemps, he did kind of try to manipulate things to force the Cavs' hands, you know, back in there. And by the way, the Cavs had the number one payroll in the NBA and traded like 7 or 8 first round picks.
And listen, it's fully within his rights to do that too. I didn't say that. I don't say it on the pod. I didn't tweet about it. It's some sort of like slander towards LeBron. Like, how dare you don't take less money? It's just, that was a path that was available. It was probably the cleanest path to them getting another star player. That path is now unavailable. And to me, what that sets up is,
I think you worked this out. What did you think if LeBron had just let his contract expire and they just held on to Westbrook and he expired, how much space would they have had?
The only guy they would have had, Anthony Davis under contract, and they would have had,
Taylor Horton Tucker has an opt out, right? I don't know if he'll take it.
He has an option in his contract. And you're putting me on the spot here, so I got to look this up.
I'm sorry, I didn't prepare you.
No, it's all good. But I'll look it up in a second. It would have been a ton of money. Anthony Davis would have been the only significant contract on their books. They would have had, you know, $60 million maybe, including having to re-sign LeBron. So they would have been able to manipulate things around like the Sixers did this summer. Sign James Harden later, sign the other guys first, and, you know, figure out, well, you have to sign LeBron first. It doesn't matter. Anyway, they could have manipulated things around, got a max free agent, re-signed LeBron, had those two guys in AD, and move forward with that team. Now, to me, what this sets up is the Lakers have to trade Russell Westbrook, because when LeBron was unsigned, they at least had the ability to say, we can ride this out with Russ. We don't have to trade these picks. We could go to next summer. We'll have a ton of cap space. We could figure it out. Now, because LeBron has signed this extension, even if the Lakers don't trade Russ, with AD and LeBron on the books, and then dead cap, you know, roster holds because they have nobody on the roster, the Lakers are only going to have enough money. You know, maybe they'll have $20, $25 million. They're not going to have enough money to sign one of those max guys. So to me, they have to use this Westbrook contract and one or two of these picks to get the team better now, because that's the only viable path they have to really improve in this team over the next couple of years. Cause otherwise it's literally just going to be AD, LeBron, and a bunch of minimums, and that's not going to be good enough.
And maybe that's, you know, really what the Lakers were saying. They were saying, if you commit to us, it makes our path easier. Mm-hmm. So now we know we do trade Russ, and we're willing to include one or both of those picks somewhere along the way.
And just answer your question real quick, the only guys they have on their roster next year under contract, besides LeBron and AD, are Damian Jones for $2.5 million and Max Christie for 1.7. So there's basically the rest of the roster is wide open.
And you know, when LeBron got there, it was a feeling of, hey, guys are going to want to play here. Guys were, you know, Anthony Davis hires Rich Paul, forces his way to the Lakers via trade, but they had a ton of trade assets. They had Brandon Ingram. They had Lonzo Ball. They had Josh Hart. They had, you know, a full stockpile
all
of picks.
They had all
their picks. The Lakers now, they've got those two picks, and Russ is a negative trade asset. So it's a totally different situation. Like, hey, guys are going to want to play for the Lakers. That's always going to be the case. But the Lakers don't have the ammo to make a major splash in the trade market. Now, maybe they can parlay Russ into trade him somewhere where a team's trying to get shed some long-term salary that's not necessarily, you know, that could be trade pieces down the road. But it's a totally different situation just in terms of the assets that Rob Pelinka and Rich Paul have to work with.
Yeah. And of course, I asked about, you know, I asked about after the deal was done, I asked about why now. And basically, I was told because LeBron believes in the Lakers.
I thought you were going to be told why not. And it was a Russell Westbrook slogan.
Well, I might have been told why not, but I don't want to quote the person. So just LeBron believes in the Lakers. Long story short, and it's not the, you know, the thing about the Lakers, it's a complicated road here, because for the last decade, the Lakers do have a championship with LeBron's name on it, hanging in the rafters. They have it, and I'm a big believer that you never strip back a championship, that winning one is so hard that you never, ever say anything bad about it. They also have a whole ton of flawed seasons. And
they have one season in 9 years where they've won a playoff series. Now, obviously, that year they won four, so it doesn't matter.
It's wild. But so, like,
that's the only year they won a playoff series since 2013.
Right. So if Rob Pelinka was like defending his position, he'd be like, I built a championship team. That's an unassailably true statement. But the rest of the teams that he's overseen put together have generally been failures.
They're like, you remember Rob Deere, the old Milwaukee Brewers?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're 1-for-4 with a home run and 3 strikeouts.
Yeah.
It's not a bad day at the ballpark, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the championship
at the end was batting like 110, you know.
Yeah.
He was like,
well, give him time.
I mean, look, the championship is all that matters in the end. But look, in the first 50 years the Lakers were in Los Angeles, they missed the playoffs 5 times. They missed the playoffs 7 of the last 9 years. Like, it's not, you know, it's a new day there. Like, it's just not, it has not been the same team. And it's actually one year of playoff series wins in a decade. Last time they won a playoff series was 2012. Like, that's just not
other than
what the Lakers. Well, no, yeah. Right. I'm just saying that's, and obviously the championship, I'm not trying to diminish the championship, but it is just like, this is not what the Lakers are used to. It's a very different world.
And so this is the Lakers. This isn't the other 29 teams, maybe 28, if you want to subtract the Celtics. This is the Lakers, where when you're talking about, you know, no brainer, top tier Hall of Fame talent to play for the Lakers, it's not, hey, he won a championship. It's, he only won one championship, right? When you sign up to play for the Lakers as one of the best players of all time, you sign up for comparisons to Magic. You sign up for comparisons to Kobe. And so it's only one championship.
Yeah. All right. We'll see how the Lakers are able to do that. Obviously, it's going to be a big topic of conversation. LeBron's contract won't be a big topic of conversation. So in that way, he kind of did the Lakers a favor. We'll see if they return it. Time for trivia.
Now it's time for Hoop Collective Trivia.
Mr. Bontom.
So we were talking about LeBron a lot today. So I thought an interesting one would be, everybody knows the 2003 draft class, one of the best draft classes of all time. Who are the top 10 scorers by points per game from the 2003 draft class?
Top 10?
You have to name all 10?
I would have done top 5, except 4 of them are blatantly obvious. So I figured we'd run through those and then see who else you can get.
You're going LeBron, Carmelo, D-Wade, Bosch probably is 1, 2, 3, 4.
That's in that order. Those are correct. So 5 would have been kind of boring. So I figured we'd see if you got how many.
Kyle Korver just retired. He was, I figured
Korver, he's be Korver was 12th.
Josh Howard is somewhere on that
Josh
list.
Josh Howard was 5th.
Okay.
Was he? Oh, that's right. He was like taking the late first round.
He was 29th pick.
He was the Mavericks.
Okay. Well, that sets an interesting bar if Josh Howard was it. What about Kirk Heinrich?
Kirk Heinrich was 10th.
Barely. What about
wasn't in that.
Was Collison?
What about Luke Ridnour?
Collison was in that draft class, but he was much farther down. Luke Ridnour was 13th.
Oh, wow.
Hey.
There's a ton of guys who are household names who are not in the top 10. Zaza Pachulia, Nick David Collison.
West. Zaza Pachulia is a household name.
Well, I mean, he's
where's your house in the Republic of Georgia?
Fair enough. I shouldn't say household names. I should say like guys who NBA fans know about. Like NBA fans, Zaza Pachulia.
Well, he did
like
almost get voted in as an All-Star starter.
He was almost an All-Star starter.
Well, no, that what did John? Nothing easy.
That's right. Boris Diaw also not in the top 10. Willie Green Boris also not in the top 10.
If Boris, oh, you're talking about scoring points, not the other kind of scoring.
Darko
in the top 10.
Darko not in the top 10 either. Oh. There's three more names left. One was a second round pick by the Jazz, who's spent a lot of time.
Paul Millsap.
Different second round pick by the Jazz.
Wes Matthews.
No, he ain't that old.
The hint is he won an All-Star. Boozer was the second round pick by the team this guy won. It was an All-Star with and played next Boozer's to LeBron. Small second scoring round. Guard, All-Star with LeBron.
Oh, come on. I'm blanking on the name.
Brian, I'm very disappointed. You have
He went to Alabama.
Yes, he did.
Oh, Mo Williams.
Mo Williams.
There you go.
I was like, All-Star with LeBron. I was pretty sure Brian would get that immediately. I didn't remember
he was in the 2003 draft.
The other two guys are point guard who had a neck injury,
TJ
cut
Ford.
His career short. TJ Ford, really fun player. And then a certain center from Central Michigan who was drafted sixth.
Chris Kamen, one of the all-time characters.
Yes. So there was the top 10. So there was the trivia.
All right.
Like I said, if it was top four, it would have been over in about 3 seconds, or top five would have been over about 4 seconds.
Well, so. Josh Howard being the number five.
I also figure McMahon would get Josh Howard pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't have that long of a career, but I guess it was.
He had a pretty good run downhill quick.
I was going by points per game. So if you do it the other way, Boris Diaw and Leandro Barbosa get up in there too.
Josh Howard, by the way, now the head coach at the University of North Texas, Dallas.
Oh, really?
He is. It's a D3 program.
Oh, interesting. That's cool. Mm-hmm.
So there's a University of North Texas stop and a University of North Texas, Dallas.
Correct.
You learn
how far apart are those?
Probably 40 minutes.
Oh, okay.
The University of North Texas, my alma mater, is the Mean Green, which would have been fitting for Josh Howard, but I don't know what North Texas Dallas' nickname is.
Oh, spectacular. Spectacular. All right. So we've been during this offseason, we've been doing a little bit of a series looking at some teams and taking pulling back the top layer. We call it what's going on with. I think that's what we call it.
What's going on in? It's your damn catchphrase.
Yeah. He doesn't know. By the way, McMahon did a nice job calling back to that on NBA Today this week.
Well, I got to give Shanae the primary credit for that. The assist. She's the one who she got the index fingers.
It was a good job by all three of you guys.
$15 each. You can send me on Venmo $15 each. I'm not even on Venmo. It's ridiculous. What's going on in Cleveland?
Ooh.
That sound has to make you smile. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to around the globe. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Synchronize your online and in-person sales. Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. So go to shopify.com/hoop, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today, Go to shopify.com/hoop right now. Shopify.com/hoop. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
Why would they do that? Very strange trade.
Why would you do that?
We thought we'd take a look at the Cavs. 44 wins last year, but did not make the playoffs. Double loss in the play-in tournament. Had some unfortunate luck with Colin Sexton. Pretty much missed the entire season. Had some other injuries. But a huge step forward for Darius Garland, who signed a max contract in the offseason. The Cavs were kind of holding cap space.
Not kind of holding cap space. They were saving a max cap slot for a certain guy from Northeast Ohio to see if he would decide to come back and play there for a third time.
Last year during the All-Star break in Cleveland, All-Star weekend, LeBron gave this interview where he said, yeah, I can see myself playing Cleveland. He qualified it by saying, you know, maybe it's a one day contract. But it was right after the Lakers didn't do anything at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And he was miffed, and it was like, what, you know, and by the way, like the Cavs, no surprise, have not had respectable is not a fair word. They haven't had a meaningful small forward since LeBron left now 5 years ago. So even with Darius Garland's, and they didn't quite have a max slot, but they could have gotten there. They were leaving a big chunk of space open. They can retire that because LeBron is going to be a Laker next year. So they need to look another direction for that. This is the final year of Kevin Love's giant contract, which at times was an albatross. Now I actually think they could trade it if they wanted to, depending on various factors. They have a whole bunch of like twos. They keep drafting twos. And they have an all-star point guard. And of course they have the rookie of the year runner up and Evan Mobley, who I voted for rookie of the year. And I have a real exciting feel about his future. That said,
and an all-star center
Jared Allen.
That's right.
He's under a long-term contract. By the way, Garland and Allen both signed five-year contracts with no player options, which in a place like Cleveland is big.
Big deal.
So the difficulty with the Cavs, by the way, I'm going to tell you some stuff about their schedule in a second, but the difficulty with the Cavs, McMahon, is that even though they've got a lot going for them, they've got a young team, I'm not sure how many teams they're going to be able to jump over in the Eastern Conference. The East is really intense ahead of them, and I'm not so sure they've gotten appreciably better enough to make a move.
Well, I think the question is, how much better can Evan Mobley get? And you know this guy is going to be one of the best defensive players in the league. Like he is very likely to be a defensive player of the year candidate for the next, 12 years, you know, whatever it might be.
For sure.
So the question is, can he become an all-star caliber offensive player? You know, he was solid last year, averaged 15 points a game, shot it right above 50% from the floor. But especially with him playing the four, you know, how much can he grow as a three-point shooter? How much can he grow as a guy who, you know, you can give the ball and he can create? He does have some passing ability. You know, can he become a primary offensive threat? I think Evan Mobley's development, or, you know, lack thereof possibly, as an offensive player is ultimately going to determine the ceiling for this team.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, Jared Allen is a really good player. We also kind of know exactly what Jared Allen is, right? Like he's going to be the same guy he's going to be for a long time. Really durable, really good guy. great role player. I mean, he's an all-star, but like he fits his role.
No, he has some touch around the rim, but he's primarily a screen, roll, finish, rebound, protect the rim, run kind of guy.
Yep. And for as good as Darius Garland is, and as much as he's improved, you know, we've seen over time, if your top player is a 6 foot tall guard,
yeah,
it limits your ceiling. Like it's just very hard to win at the very highest levels if that's the guy you're going to with 2 minutes to go in the game. Like we've seen it over and over and over again. So Evan Mobley is the key to that. Like, can he continue to take the strides forward that he showed as a rookie and be a, you know, perennial all-star player, you know, as a hybrid forward center who can guard every position and become, like you said, McMahon, really a hub of their offense. And then to me, the other question is the Cavs have thrown a lot of assets at the wing, right? Yeah. They still have the Colin Sexton situation unresolved. Maybe now that LeBron's off the table, maybe they come to some sort of agreement with him. Maybe they up their offer a little bit, try to get something done there. I didn't like the Caris LeVert deal at the time.
Well, LeVert is also extension eligible. It's possible they could extend
him. They could extend him too.
I don't think they're signing both of them long term. Right.
Well, they could extend LeVert. No, go ahead, Tim. Sorry.
I didn't like giving up that first round pick for LeVert, but because of the protections, if they don't take him a step forward this year, they might not end up giving
that's the first true. Round pick they might him. Be in the lottery again, and then they don't give up a pick at all. And then they drafted Isaac Okoro fifth a couple of years ago. They then seemed to pretty clearly draft over him, drafting Oshae Agbaji from Kansas, mm-hmm. one of the older players in the draft, a guy who was the National Player of the Year at Kansas, a guy who in theory is going to step right in and play on the wing, because to Brian's point, that's been a black hole for them the past couple of years. So maybe they could try to address that next summer. But those are the two things. Can they find, you know, some really consistent help on the wing? Because they had Lauri Markkanen playing, starting at small forward all last year. You're not going to win big doing that. And can
there's some photos going around? There's some photos going around of Markkanen playing for the Finnish national team this summer, where he's like, I don't know if they're manipulated, but he's like super cut.
I mean, that's fine. He's not fast enough to play small forward.
Well, I know. I'm just saying, like, I don't know if, you know, hashtag 15 pounds of muscle hit or 10 pounds of muscle hit Markkanen. I don't know, but it's
well, if you're going to have, Cavs fans are excited about these photos. If you're going to have Markkanen defending on the perimeter, it's a pretty good idea to have Mobley and Allen cleaning up a whole lot of messes behind him. And by the way, same thing with Darius Garland, the point guard. Like, those guys can – you can be – they can forgive a lot of defensive sins on the perimeter with those two guys behind
them. But to your point, McMahon, and for both of you guys, like, where do you see the Cavs right now in the East? Because to me, if you go through it, and right now you have to assume that the Nets are going to be – basically what they were last year, at least as of now, like doesn't seem like these guys are getting traded. So, you know, Boston, Toronto, Brooklyn,
well, hold on, Philly. So, I don't know about Toronto. They and Toronto are kind of neck and neck in my mind. They were neck and neck to get in, to avoid the play-in this last year. Toronto ended up winning that and getting into
Toronto
the
had a lot.
Seed.
Toronto was never healthy all year. I think Toronto's a pretty clearly better team. Maybe you guys disagree. I think they're a level above.
Okay, just hold up. They play on opening night. Low-key, interesting opening night game in Toronto. I believe it's in Toronto.
Scotty Barnes v. Evan Mobley.
Yeah, 1-2 in the Rookie of the Year from last year. That game could end up being a factor, because last year the Cavs-Raptors came right down to the end on the tiebreaker, and just saying, what happens on opening night usually doesn't really make much of a difference in the NBA. That I circled that game and said, you know what? That could end up being an important game, because, well, I think the Raptors and Cavs are comparable.
So set Toronto aside. Philly, Boston, Brooklyn, all better. Milwaukee, Miami, better. Chicago, better.
I'm not committed to worse. Chicago's better. I'm not committed.
So they
are. You're saying better than Cleveland, right?
Yeah, I'm asking.
I'm not committing to Chicago there. I think that the Cavaliers are somewhere between, what, 6-8, 5-8, somewhere in there. And again,
it's just a fascinating group of teams. You got Atlanta, who just went on to get DeJounte Murray. Yeah. They're somewhere in that mix. You've got Toronto.
Atlanta finished behind them last year, beat them in the play-in, but finished behind them in the regular season.
But I would say they're a more talented team, though. But they're in that group. Toronto's in that group. Chicago's in that group. Cleveland's in that group. Like, those teams are all sort of 7-10, right now.
Yeah, like, and Cleveland that's an interesting is mix. Cleveland is. I don't know how big of a step they make this. Obviously, they took a huge step last season, and I think that you can certainly say that the air was pointing up. I think if you talk about like 24 and under cores, that you have to put the Cavaliers in the conversation as the best young cores in the league. When you have two guys who are all-stars, and certainly I would bank on Mobley being a multi-time all-star. So three young all-star type of talents. I think getting Rubio back, we'll see. I don't know exactly where he is in terms of his recovery, but losing him certainly hurt last year. I think getting him back definitely helps. But again, I just go back to, it really does come down to Evan Mobley's development offensively. And I think when you look at young Anthony Davis, young Chris Bosh, young Kevin Garnett, and compare their rookie year numbers with Mobley's rookie year numbers. Now Mobley was 20 years old, but yeah, those are three guys who obviously developed into all-star go-to type of guys, plus what they did on the defensive end. And I think that's a reasonable hope for Mobley.
And I'm only pointing out those teams just as an example, like as an illustration of how, like, the East isn't what it used to be. Like, normally you'd see a team with this Cavs group, like, you'd think they're going to be they'd be a top five team in the East.
They won 44 games. Most of the time in the last decade, 44 games, like the five seed.
Right.
It might have even been the four seed one of those years. One thing before we move on, I wanted to point out about their schedule, because we'll talk about the schedule because it just came out yesterday. Ed Kupfer, who has been a longtime analyst of the Houston Rockets and sometimes tweets some of his stuff, especially his schedule analysis. I'm going to tell you something about the Cavs schedule that comes from the charts that Ed tweeted out. The Cavs are tied for having the most number of games when they have more rest days than their opponent. So they have the most favor. They're tied with Sacramento and the Lakers for having the most favorable schedule where they're going to have a rest advantage on their opponent. They have the fewest back-to-backs in the league of any team. They're tied with a number of teams who have the same, but they've got the fewest. Last year, they had a bunch of back-to-backs extra because they had to give up their arena for some time to prep for the All-Star stuff. So they had cost them in back-to-backs. And they travel, and this has been the case for a long time, and it remains the case. They have the fewest miles traveled this year because Cleveland – when I covered the Cavs and then moved to Miami to cover the Heat, it was like a cold slap in the face about how much longer I spent on airplanes. Every flight, like half the teams in the NBA are like 90 minutes or less flight from Cleveland.
So, a lot of people feel sympathy whenever somebody makes that move from Cleveland to Miami.
Yeah, it was a lot longer flight down to South Florida in those winters.
I felt that covering the playoffs this year, like the Boston to Miami flights back and forth. That was like 3:15. Every flight, like it's a long way.
Plus all the time you waited on the tarmac to get out of the city. So, so anyway, the Cavs schedule, like everybody's always talking about, oh, the league screwed us, the league hates us, blah, blah, blah. That's been the case for 74 years. This, it's the 76th year of the NBA, probably 75 years teams have been complaining about the schedule. So the Cavs actually, as you look at that, the schedule kind of could favor them. And if we're talking about them being a narrow difference between them maybe being the eighth seed or being the sixth seed, which is a huge difference, that schedule being favorable could end up being a factor. So I would just point that out as we talk about them. We'll see who's actually there in training camp, whether Colin Sexton is there. That'll be interesting to see whether he accepts the qualifying offer or he just flat doesn't sign it and waits for something to happen. Or they come to some terms. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Okay. Before we go, I want to talk about a story that you published this week, Bontemps. Some people are still working. I'm barely working. I'm gonna be honest.
I was going to say which one. I had two stories on back to back.
Oh, days. Wow. The most productive man in mid-August. Look out.
Neither one of these ideas are my ideas. So I'll take all the credit.
You wrote this story with Bobby Marks. Was Bobby involved in this or just you and Pelton?
It was me and the machine.
You and Kevin Pelton. Tell us about this story. I don't think I've ever seen something quite like this before.
Well, this was fully the machine's idea, so full credit to him for it. But
you're deleted.
You didn't even need to say that. We figured that part out.
It was his idea. But he called me a couple weeks ago and had an idea to do, you know, everybody talks about the idea of NBA teams being all in, and this came from the Minnesota Timberwolves making the Rudy Gobert trade. Obviously, that's a trade that you go all in to do that. But that got us to thinking, like, what does it mean to be all in the NBA? Because Minnesota, yes, they went all in to make that Rudy Gobert trade, but they're probably not going to win a championship with him on the team, even though they were very happy to get him. So, like, what does that entail? And so we ended up breaking the league down into all 30 teams into 7 different tiers of all in. Some teams are all in on tanking. Some teams are all in on winning a championship today. Some teams are just all in on trying to be pretty good and win a playoff series. Some teams are all in on making the play-in tournament, like Sacramento, for example. so that we, you know, kind of went through and put all 30 teams in different brackets. And I think it's an interesting way to look at sort of the overall direction.
All right, here are the 6 teams you and Pelton have listed as all in on a championship this season.
Yep.
The Clippers, the Heat, the Bucks, the 76ers, the Suns, and the Nets, all in for the Nets on, with their star player asking for the coach and GM to be fired.
Well, as of now, with all their stars on the team, if you ask the Nets what if they go into the season with this roster,
I agree.
Their expectation is to win a championship. They have a realist. I mean, they have a somewhat realistic path to doing so. I wouldn't say they're going to. And they have no picks. Like, they mortgaged the future to have this team. So that was sort of what the rubric was. Like, if you check those 3 boxes, you're in that group. Yeah, it's a big word for you, I know.
The rubric's the Rubik cube.
Oh.
Rubriced cube. The second tier is all in on a championship over the next 5 seasons, which you have the Warriors in here.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Which you may say, well, wait a minute. How could the Warriors, the defending champs, not be all in on a championship, especially with a $350 million payroll? But it's kind of true because they have these young guys and they have all their draft picks. They haven't traded their picks.
They had the Warriors and the Celtics. So you had the 2 teams that, that played in the finals last year. Also had the Nuggets, who I think certainly, I mean, so you've got 4 teams that are contenders right now.
Yeah.
Celtics, Warriors, 4
teams,
Nuggets,
that
Grizzlies.
You had in, and not necessarily all in this year, but all in for the short term, is Celtics, Nuggets, Warriors, Grizzlies, Bontemps.
Yeah, I mean, again, this group was about not only are you capable of winning today, but you should be capable of winning 5 years from now. I was a little less sure about Golden State being in this group. Kevin was pretty adamant they should be.
Your name is on it, Bontemps. It's your
it's a collaborative thing. We talked through them all. So I ultimately went with him on it. I would have probably had them in the first group because I'm not as sold on these young guys, but they do have these young guys. They do have all their picks. They do have flexibility going forward. And that does separate them from the teams in that first group, who basically all have traded a ton of picks or just have really old teams.
So yeah, the big thing with the Warriors is, sorry, McMahon. The big thing with the Warriors is, Jordan Poole is eligible for an extension. Andrew Wiggins is eligible for an extension. They're both going to be on the team this year. We know this. We also know that signing either of them.
Draymond Green big, also eligible for an extension.
Yeah, but Draymond has 2 years left. This is the last year of the contract for both Poole and Wiggins. So if they don't extend, you're looking at them heading towards walk years.
Draymond's a free agent next summer. I'm not sure what you're talking about. You got player option. You got player option next year.
I stand corrected.
Yeah.
I stand corrected. Do we think Draymond's opting out of that money though?
I don't know. We'll see.
I wouldn't rule that out.
I wouldn't rule it out either.
Well, he's certainly going to posture that he's going to do that.
I'm not saying he will or won't, but I would say that it's possible.
So anyway, Joe Lacob is on the record as saying we're not going to have a $400 million payroll. Now, there could be some changes to the luxury tax as part of the new CBA. So we'll see about how that could change. But I'll be interested to see if any of these guys are signed, And if they're signed, which ones? Are they all three signed? Are none of them signed? Is Poole extended, but Wiggins and Draymond not? Is Draymond extended, but Poole and Wiggins not? As far as where they are on this tier, I think what they do with those extensions is a big indication of, you know, how they see this team going forward.
I was going to say, I think you have to consider the Warriors all in on a championship just because of the age of their no-brainer Hall of Famers. Steph's 34 years old. When you have 34-year-old Steph Curry coming off of a championship, you're all in on winning a championship now. Now, they're trying to extend that window, but...
Right. I mean, that group is all in on a championship this year and the next several years. It's not that, like, those are the teams that can fit into both camps. Those other teams 5 years from now, for a variety of reasons, are probably not going to be with the current group they have championship level teams. The Warriors at least have a chance to be for all the reasons we laid out. That's why they're in that group. It's not that they're not all in for this year on a title.
All right. There's a whole bunch of teams that come in the middle, couple of middle tiers. I encourage you to read the story just for time. I'm not going to go over all of them now, but I want to go over the two bottom tiers, which you don't say tanking. You use draft positioning. The teams that are in on draft positioning. Well said there.
I thought that was a fun way to do that. That was
well done. You have five teams: the Rockets, Pacers, Magic, Spurs, and Jazz. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Do we think the Pacers are actually there yet? Certainly, Brogdon trade nudges them there.
Let me just stop you and ask you, why would they not be there?
Because their team is quote unquote good enough. I think they're going to be, I don't think they're a playoff team, but I don't know if they're all in on draft positioning.
Do you think Tyrese Halliburton is going to be shut down by mid-March? Do you think he's playing April basketball games?
Well, that was one of the things that they argued this last year, is that they played Halliburton. Because they tanked down the stretch.
I mean, what's their starting lineup right now? Who are their starting forwards right now?
Well, okay, but I'm just saying, like, they still have some guys in this roster that they could trade. They haven't done yet.
I'm sure Miles Turner's probably going to get traded. I'll just ask you again: who are their starting forwards? Jalen Smith,
Buddy Hield.
Just starting Buddy Hield at the three. Okay, that seems like a tanking move to me.
I would agree with that.
Ben Mathurin, who I think he's got a chance to be a stud. Yeah. He's also a rookie guard. Guards tend to be disasters.
The fastest way to lose in the NBA is to start.
Well, there you go. They're going to be starting a rookie at shooting guard. Right now, they're probably starting Buddy Hield. That's small forward. Right. They're starting a center at power forward.
Okay, I'm not going to argue about the Pacers. Now let's talk about the other team on this list at the bottom, the Jazz. They're not all in yet because they still have Bojan Bogdanović on the roster. They still have Mike Conley on the roster, and they still have Donovan Mitchell on the roster.
They currently don't have a starting center. They currently don't have a starting small forward.
Well, listen, man.
And if Donovan Mitchell's on the team in 3 months, then I'll be wrong.
The title of the piece is all in on, big guy. all in.
Oh, he big guy.
They're not. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. This is a thing about the Jazz. Like, they're not all in yet. So when are they going to be all in? Are they? Because if they,
Bontemps, I would guess by the season opener.
Okay, you've said this to me, Bontemps. Mm-hmm. If they, now granted, they just traded their two best defensive players and their coach, who was an excellent defensive coach, have walked out the door.
Right.
So now you figure that they're going to plummet down the defensive stats, that they're going to be all of a sudden completely the opposite of the defensive team they've been the last few years. Oh. All right, I agree with that.
Let's just do this. Let's just do this the opposite way. As of right now, how many teams in the West are the Jazz better than?
I'm just saying they're going to win some games because they've got three really good players.
Okay, big guy. We'll do it the other way. Answer my question. How many teams right now in the West are the Jazz better than?
I assume they're better than the Rockets and the Spurs because you've got them, all these teams in the draft position.
I would say that's the end of the list. You could also, I think the Thunder are probably going to be better than them as of now.
By the way, it's interesting to me that I can no longer say the OKC Tanker according to these tiers, that you've elevated the Thunder.
Yeah, that was another semi-contentious one because I probably would have put them in this tier. We went back and forth.
The Thunder are in the all in on their current core is what you have them.
Yeah, in. KP was again pretty insistent on that. That one you could go either.
The tiebreaker was based on IQ, so KP got to you know.
I ain't arguing that
all the arguments.
I'll argue IQ with you. I ain't arguing it with KP.
All right. Well, I'm just saying I don't know if the Jazz are all in yet. So let's just see what they do.
Keyword. Do you think the Jazz will be all in sooner than later this season?
You just said, I mean, you know, just to follow up, you just said you thought the Jazz will be in by the opener. I mean, you think they're trading all these guys by the opener? I'm not sure.
No, I think they're trading Donovan by the opener. And then you're not Conley and Bogdanovich. You're not going to win a bunch of games with those two guys as your best players.
I was going to bring this up earlier because in the Lakers section, I forgot. If I'm the Lakers, I'm looking at the Jazz roster and I'm thinking, got Mike Conley, got Bojan Bogdanovich, got Jordan Clarkson, got Patrick Beverley. They could get all four of those guys with THT and Russ.
Why do you have like 14 Band-Aids on your fingers?
I tripped and hurt my hand the other day. So I got Band-Aids on my hand.
This is the second mad fall that we've heard. Remember when he hit the White House?
Yes. Yes. Tell the story. You got to tell
the
story.
He almost broke
his
wrist when he fell at the White House.
I just tripped and fell. It was not a big deal.
Because he had new shoes.
I landed like this.
What time was this?
I was running and I tripped and fell.
You were
running.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not like during the day. Yes, I'm fine.
So during the bar crawl.
No, it was not a bar crawl. But if I'm the Jazz, I'm looking at those four. I'm looking at those four guys, or if I'm the Lakers, I'm looking at those four guys and thinking those are the kind of guys that, to go back to earlier conversation, the Lakers could get them. They could really be in some business.
And not just the Lakers. Like, there's a lot of teams that could use any one of those.
Sure. I mean the Lakers could literally get all of them.
Yeah. But there's a lot of teams that can use them.
The Lakers could get. Wait a minute. Just go over that again. I'm sorry, McMahon. I've been interrupting. I apologize. Just real quick again, Bontemps. Just in theory, let's say that they do a Donovan Mitchell trade. Let me just say, like, this kind of reminds me of when the Knicks were negotiating for Carmelo Anthony. And it was like, I know the Nets got in there and whatever, and they got some level of close, but really it was like a 4 or 5 month dance.
Right.
How much are the Knicks going to end up paying for Carmelo? That was really what it was about.
Have you talked to anybody in the league who does not expect the Knicks to get Donovan Mitchell?
So I think you always acknowledge that in the NBA, things change. You do get surprised. It's the nature of the league. But after you qualify it with that, you say, really, this is just a matter of establishing
when and how much. Yeah.
Okay. So you think that could happen before the start of the season? I would be surprised if that happened before the start of the season, because I just think they're not going to agree on the price.
I hope for Will Hardy's sake that it does.
Let's say that Donovan gets traded to New York or elsewhere, and then the Jazz have to go truly all in on this tank draft positioning. Go over again that trade you think this in theory possible. You're not saying it's going to happen, but in theory possible.
No, I mean, with the money works for THT and Russ, for Beverley, Conley, Bogdanovich, and Clarkson. The money works. That's all.
I mean, that would make the Lakers with the two picks unprotected.
Yeah, I'm not. I wasn't including picks. I mean, obviously, you'd include picks. I just meant the money works for those four guys.
Yeah, they're not giving. They're not giving two firsts for those guys.
Maybe one. Boy, Bogdanović. I think he's the Jazz can get a first for Bogdanović. Beverly's a very interesting player.
Yeah, so I'd say you'd offer a first in there.
How would you rank those guys? How would you rank them in terms of?
Well, you're taking Conley money in that trade. You're taking Conley money.
He's partially guaranteed, not this season, next season.
Yeah, but it's like $15 million. It's not.
Yeah, it's a significant guarantee.
You'd have to give up both first for that, Brian.
You think?
Yeah, 100%.
Bogdanović brings you back a first, and I think between those other three guys, I mean, but you're giving.
THT has got value.
No, he doesn't.
Does he?
What value does he have?
Well, what if he's playing?
He has value to the Lakers because he's a clutch guy.
Too high talent.
We'll talk about this later. I want to go into the last tier. All in on
what?
Nothing. Nothing. That's what it says. All in on nothing. And we got three teams that Bontemps and Pelton put on this tier. The Dallas Mavericks, McMahon's Mavericks, Luka not
having my Mavericks.
McMahon's hometown, Dallas Mavericks, Los Angeles Lakers, and the Toronto Raptors. Just the Raptors taking shrapnel,
man,
down here.
Well, the interesting thing about this was all three of these teams are kind of left without a home, because if you look at what the Mavs did with Jalen Brunson this offseason, you can't really say they're all in on anything today. You could say they're all in on maybe max cap space in a couple of years. But it's hard to look at them as being an all in on something when you let your second best player walk for free. The Lakers haven't done anything with Russ yet. They're sitting there with Russ and these two picks, like we just talked about. So they're kind of, you know, you could argue, understandably, looking at it and saying we're not good enough to win, so we're going to hold our powder for now. But they haven't picked a direction. And then Toronto, for sort of the complete opposite reason, hasn't really picked a direction, because obviously Scotty Barnes is a stud. Mm-hmm. Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby, all very good players. Gary Trent. But those guys are all sort of in another tier older than Scotty Barnes. And the Raptors have all their picks. So they can kind of go one of four or five directions. But they haven't picked one yet.
Let me speak to something about the Raptors right now that's interesting in the league, that league executives are talking to me about. With the 33rd pick in the draft this year, they drafted a big guy out of Arizona, Christian Koloko. He is unsigned, okay? All of the other top second-round picks are signed. The Pacers, with the 31st pick, they gave Andrew Nembhard a four-year, $8-point-something million contract. The Magic drafted Caleb Houston with the 32nd pick. They gave him a four-year, $8 million contract. The Thunder, right behind the Raptors after Koloko, gave Jalen Williams a four-year, $8 million contract. You mentioned earlier about the Lakers giving Max Christie a contract. All the guys around him in the second round are signed. The Raptors have not signed Christian Koloko. Now, why would they have not done that?
Ooh, Wendy, getting all philosophical.
Why would they
again?
Have not signed him yet?
Ah, the fingers are firing.
So the Raptors used about, I think it was $6 million, maybe exactly. I got to go look. I should have been prepared for this. They signed Otto Porter. They used a portion of the mid-level exception. Mm-hmm. If they sign Koloko to a deal, that's what those 4 year deals, that is around $2 million in the first year, maybe a little less than that, like those other guys around him.
Yeah. Well, it's not that if they gave Otto Porter basically the tax MLE. So if they sign Christian Koloko to a 3 year deal, more than, cause you can sign a second round pick to a 2 year minimum deal. Mm-hmm. They sign a second round pick for more than 2 years, you have to use an exception or cap space. So if they sign him even to just the standard second round pick number, but sign him for 3 years, they're going to go over the taxpayer MLE, and therefore they're going to trigger the hard cap.
Right. So why would they not want to trigger the hard cap? Why would they be waiting to sign this guy? He played in summer league. He had an
to see
okay
if they can
summer.
Make a Kevin Durant trade or some Thank other you. Trade. That's why.
They're leaving their options open.
Yeah. Would you give up Scotty Barnes for KD?
No.
Absolutely not.
then I don't think they're getting Kevin Durant.
No, I don't either.
An executive who I respect said he would give up Scottie Barnes for KD.
Well, look,
but not
here's
for
the, here's the stopgap for KD. When you talk about Durant trades now that we know that Jaylen Brown has been included in talks, that's a fail-safe stop measure.
That's a high bar.
Because if your team is putting together an offer, and I don't care how many picks it is, that doesn't include a player that's comparable to Jaylen Brown.
And that's not a long list when you talk about youth, talent, proven production.
And guys, you can trade for them because they've got Ben Simmons triggering that whole set of rules. Mm-hmm. Like, would you rather have Jaylen Brown or Pascal Siakam?
I was just going to say, I think that's a pretty good debate. I think you could argue Pascal. I would probably rather have Jaylen because he's more of a wing than Pascal. But Pascal's pretty damn good.
Yeah, well, Pascal made All NBA this year. Am I wrong?
For a second time.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty damn good player.
Jaylen Brown was the second best player on a finals team.
Pascal was the second best player on a championship winning team, you could argue.
I don't know if he's the second best player.
Kyle Lowry might have something to say about it.
He was pretty damn good in those finals.
He played an important role. I agree. But anyway, the Raptors are leaving their options open. So I don't know. I mean, that's interesting. The Mavericks, I don't know what their options are, though. Like, I do think the Mavericks kind of fit into this tier, McMahon.
Yeah, the Mavericks would argue that they're all in on winning a championship in the next 5 years. That's what their argument would be. But, you know, and we've talked about their offseason a lot. It wasn't a step in the right direction. They felt like the number for Brunson got too high, and we don't know what they would have had to put on the table to keep him. They might have had to max him. They weren't willing to do that. So, yeah, they are kind of stuck in the middle. But again, I think their deal is they would rather keep some flexibility, kind of be patient, than make a panic move. We'll see how it plays out. I think we all understand when you have a superstar of Luka's caliber, his 4-year Supermax extension is kicking in because the 5th year is a player option. So, you know, the clock is ticking.
Well, and again, to be clear on that tier, it's to win. It's being all in on a title this year and the next 5.
Okay.
And the map, like, I think it got shortened a little bit online. And the Mavs, like, they're not a championship team this year. They're probably a play-in team this year. So
yeah, we'll see. The play-in might be.
I don't know if a team
harsh,
with Luka on is a play-in team.
Yeah, that might be, especially Luka, who.
Let's just go through it real quick. Phoenix, Memphis, Clippers, Warriors, Wolves. Sorry, 5.
I mean, is it? Like, hold on, the Phoenix team that the Mavericks beat by 197 points in Game 7, and then they said nothing but drama since then. Phoenix team,
that
you just assuming.
I mean, they were 15 wins better last year. I think. Has that gap gotten smaller this offseason?
I think it has. Also, I think when you're looking at last season, the Mavericks sucked for the first 2.5 months. For a variety of reasons, one of which was that Luka weighed 260 some odd pounds. Luka's going to be playing Eurobasket for Slovenia, basically leading right up into training camp.
Yep.
Now you can worry about wear and tear, or you can say, hey, he ain't weighing 260. He probably's going to report to camp in the 240s this year.
That's certainly
last
the
time
argument
he did that was the only time he's done that was his second year when he made the leap from, wow, what a spectacular rookie season. Holy crap, this is a top 5 player in the league. If Luka can make a leap, I don't think you can cross the Mavericks off the list of potential home court advantage in the first round teams in the West.
That's definitely the pro Dallas argument.
Well, again, when Luka's in shape, the Mavericks have been really damn good.
No, I'm not saying that facetiously. That's if you're making an argument for Dallas, that's the argument that Luka's going to be able to carry them. Like, I just, those top 6 teams in the West are really good.
Yeah. The Clippers, obviously, they're going to come back. And the Clippers not only are bringing back Kawhi and PG, but they've signed so many tradable contracts. They don't have tremendous first round pick, obviously, but they have these guys that they can use in a trade. And I also think Phoenix, if slash when they don't make a Durant trade, I think that Phoenix is in position to make some sort of trade during the year. Jay Crowder is on the last year of his deal. He could get moved, I think. And we're going to see Dario Saric come back. I don't know what Saric is going to give him. He's coming off an ACL tear. But if you have those two guys, plus they have all their picks going forward, they could do something during the year to upgrade their roster. So, you know, we're, this is an August activity. We have, may have a different discussion by January, February. All right. I enjoyed it, guys. Congratulations again to McMahon. Go to work over there at the LAPC. Look forward to seeing an NBA today. Bontemps, take care of those fingers. Thank you to our producers, Bruce and Jackson. Everyone, thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.